Edward Isaac Dover. The book is Battle for the Soul. I'm also a staff writer at The Atlantic.
So let's go back to Wednesday, November 9th of 2016. We had Hillary Clinton giving that difficult concession speech. Tears are streaming down people's faces. The Democrats can't believe they lost to Donald Trump. From your reporting for this book, did anybody start to doubt the party's principles or philosophy, or did they immediately launch into arguments that, you know, racists couldn't stand a black man in the White House, and this was the reaction?
Well, all of the above. Donald Trump's win was such a surprise to Democrats that it kind of scrambled their brains, and there was this thinking of, you know, how much do we have to change? How much do we have to do things differently to appeal to people? What did we get wrong here? But the other thing that was going on, importantly, in that point was that Trump was not seen as someone who would lead as partisan a presidency as he ultimately did. There was, you know, before Infrastructure Week became a joke of the Trump administration, there was a push to make infrastructure happen. And a bill that would have been something that Republicans and Democrats alike might have been able to sign on, at least in concept. That's obviously not what happened. And so those are all parts of what I trace in the book of what happened as the Democrats tried to rethink what they were supposed to be.
You started traveling with Joe Biden in 2019, and one of your observations is this was not a well-put-together campaign, but it did, of course, end up winning. How did that happen?
Well, that's what the book is about in part, right? There are a lot of things that came together here, a kaleidoscope of factors that ultimately were capped off by the primary campaign being cut short, essentially, by the coronavirus landing right after Super Tuesday for Biden. But you see the development of the race, of the party changing, and you also see Biden himself changing. But, you know, there's a moment early in the Biden campaign, and I was in Ottumwa with Biden in June of 2019, and there's a theater there that seats, I think, 600-700 people. And we walked into the space, and the seats were set up in a hallway on the side of the theater. And I first thought, okay, that's where the reporters are supposed to go. That's our workspace to, you know, write our stories or record our interviews, whatever. And then I realized, no, they actually realized they couldn't fill the theater. And so the event was in the hall space there. And Biden ended up filling that space, but they had put out about 80 chairs. They were really excited that they got about 200 people. You were having candidates at that point, Sanders and Warren and Buttigieg, who were drawing much bigger crowds than that. And Biden was struggling and stumbling through the year. He was almost bankrupt in his campaign all the way through the end. And to the point that, as I report in the book, at one point they were ordering extra food on the press bus, the bus of reporters that was following the campaign around, the extra sandwiches and salads that they charge to the press account, because that way there would be enough money to pay for staff to have a sandwich or a salad.
They would tell you, of course, that they knew all along this was going to come together, but there must have been some moments where, you know, you could see in the eyes of staffers and so forth that things were not going well.
Not just staffers, and you know, there's a moment. Remember, Biden comes in fourth in the Iowa caucuses. He knows he's about to do really badly in the New Hampshire primary. Ultimately, he came in fifth, and his campaign decides to pull him out of New Hampshire and send him to South Carolina. So while everybody else was in New Hampshire on the night of the primary, Biden was having a rally in South Carolina. Before he leaves New Hampshire, he stops in one place, and he knows that Chris Coons, the senator from Delaware and someone he's known for decades, was there. And he calls Coons gets Coons to come backstage. And Coons is shocked by how distraught Biden looks. And Biden is looking at the race at that point. And he says, "No, I did what the candidate's supposed to do. I gave the speeches. I did my part. And the campaign just, it didn't work." He just goes, "Damn it." Like that. And that was, Biden was really struggling, feeling that it all slipping through his fingers. Of course, things changed very rapidly. And it's, as I outlined in the book, it was a process that was kind of crazy as it was happening. But you can see the pieces of it all lining up in the way that they did. And I hope in the way that I laid it out here.
In terms of the basic goal of defeating Donald Trump last year, would you agree that Biden was the only person running who could actually do it?
The hypotheticals on this are really hard to say. But I think when you look at the results, There's certainly a strong argument that that the coalition that Biden put together couldn't have been put together by anyone else in the same way. It doesn't mean there wouldn't have been another coalition that could have worked. And it's important because Biden won the popular vote by 7 million votes, but there just 77,000 votes in a handful of states would have, if they had switched and been for Trump, would have given Trump a win in the Electoral College. So Biden could have still won by 7 million votes, and Trump could have won the Electoral College. Those kinds of margins means that, like, there's something to the Biden argument. Of course, the Biden argument by the end of the campaign last year was different from the Biden argument at the beginning of the campaign in some ways. Some things ran consistent throughout, and some things were changed largely by the circumstances of the pandemic.
You know, although a lot of it is on a reality TV level, President Trump carries himself like a boss. But I thought it was interesting that you're writing that the real boss may actually be Joe Biden in terms of his confidence in this job as United States president, decades of preparation for it. Is Joe Biden currently exuding both competence and confidence?
When I spoke to him, there's an interview with him in the book that ends the book. It was conducted at the beginning of February. It was the beginning. It was the first interview that he did as president. And there was a confidence that was coming out of him that was notable to me, having covered him for a number of years, that reflects what I've heard from other people who've spoken to him, that as president, he feels more sure of himself and more of a sense of himself than he had before he took the oath of office. There's something coming out of him. And one of the ways that I heard that is that he said to me, I'll try to recreate the quote for you, and you can hear the old Biden lack of as much confidence then melding into where things are now. He said to me, I'm going to say something outrageous. Well, not that outrageous. I'm the most progressive person who's ever been president. And, you know, that's a comment in his mind, not just about like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren and, you know, saying, look at my agenda now, but also saying to people, this is not like, don't say that Barack Obama is just the only important person here, right? Like, I'm president now. I'm doing a lot of things. It's a big, big opportunity and this big agenda here for Democrats. And when I talked to him, it was before the American Rescue Plan had passed, but with that in and what the hope is still within the administration on infrastructure, on things like passing family leave, other things, Biden has a real sense of urgency and of how big he wants to blow in this presidency that he has been waiting for his whole life. One thing that I note in the book is that he obviously is aware of the fact that his presidency is in part a function of Barack Obama. Obama picked him to be the running mate, made him the vice president, elevated him that way, gave him a connection to black voters that was super important in the primary. Biden is also aware that his presidency is, of course, a function in part of Donald Trump, that part of why he won the primary is because people were looking at him and saying, you know, we can sort out questions of ideology and all that stuff later. This is about who can beat Trump. And that helped Biden. And then, of course, everything that happened in Biden running as a reaction to the way Trump had handled, especially the coronavirus, but everything else. But Biden is determined to not let that be his only place in history, that it's not just that he's a function of Obama and Trump, that he is determined that his presidency will be significant in a major, major way throughout all sorts of aspects of American life. When I talked to him, he pointed out to me the portrait of Franklin Roosevelt that he put in that prime spot over the fireplace in the Oval Office. That's how he's thinking about things now. That's how he's orienting himself now. It's not the presidency that he might have been expecting when he got into the race, but it's the one that he has now.
Forgive me for bringing up the author of another book on the same subject matter, but I recently talked to Jonathan Allen of NBC News, who said that Joe Biden and Barack Obama have a mentor-mentee relationship. The problem is they can't agree on who the mentor is. How would you describe the relationship?
It's sort of like a big brother-little brother relationship, but the funny thing is that Obama is the big brother in the relationship. It's a very tight personal relationship. But politically, one of the people that I quote in my book is Jen Psaki, who was the communications director for Obama at the end of his time as president, and of course is now the press secretary for Biden. When I spoke to her, it was last summer. It was before we knew that she was going to be the press secretary. But she said to me that Obama always underestimated Biden's political skills because They were so different from his own. That's the same thing about Biden. There's a moment in the book also that I reference where Biden, he's flying around on Air Force Two when he's vice president. He's talking about Obama and he says, you know, I've never seen somebody who's better at talking to 10,000 people than to one. And he says it with just sort of like a mystification about it. How can that be true? Right? He's so like Obama has these rallies and people, but that Obama doesn't have those close interpersonal skills or the interest in having those skills. Obama would probably say the exact opposite about Biden, right? The reverse, that like, sure, Joe Biden is good meeting with people, but he was skeptical throughout the entire campaign. Aren't people going to really show up for Joe Biden? Are they going to fill a rally like the, you know, respond to him, the kind of emotion that they responded to me? Look, it worked out for both of them. They've both been elected president of the United States. So it's not one formula that works here, I guess.